Go ahead, Carl.
Oh, thank you. Did you want video on?
I did not because I'm managing two computers right now.
Oh no, I mean, I can't turn my video camera on.
Huh.
The settings are forbidding. I mean, it's fine to just do audio if that's what we got.
Is that something Camille can undo for you, Carl?
Yeah, I think AJ's taken over because I don't think Camille's actually there.
That is correct. Carl, if you start the meeting, I can talk a little bit about during my announcement while I figure this out.
Okay, sounds good. Great. Well, it doesn't look like we have enough for quorum, but I'll go and get us started. So good afternoon, everybody. This is the Lane Transit District Board of Directors special meeting. Today is Wednesday, November 4th, 4:30 p.m. I call this meeting to order. We'll do a roll call with the people we do have here. I will start with Joshua Scove.
I'm here.
Steven Yet.
Also here.
And I, Carl Ye, am also here. And so hopefully we'll have Caitlin Vargas, Don Norden, and Emily Secord joining us soon. So some really quick comments from me. I want to let everyone know that I do need to repurpose our November 18th work session, that's 2 weeks from now, to complete the general manager's evaluation. We need to accomplish three things during that meeting. We need to, one, complete the evaluation, two, discuss the possibility of a merit increase, which is required that we need to consider in the contract. And then three, set the goals for the general manager for the rest of the fiscal year. The other announcement I want to make is that there are no board or committee meetings next Wednesday, which is Veterans Day. And I just want to take the opportunity to thank our military service people, both past and present, for their service. So thank you there. We'll go to comments from the general manager. Go ahead, AJ, if you have any.
I do. Let me start off by just announcing that Camille, the clerk of the board, is unable to make today's meeting. So I am logged on only under the account for that reason. And I just activated the video. I had to have clicked an arrow. So if the board would like to show video, they are allowed at this time. So I am a co-host, so I can also activate features. We do not have public testimony today. So fortunately, I don't have to manage all those moving pieces, but Camille has a family emergency that she is managing. And then I do have an announcement for myself. I just want to state that last night, we were well prepared and continue to be prepared this evening for the announcement of the 2020 presidential election results. And just in an abundance of caution, staff has been working behind the scenes with our local jurisdictions to ensure that our bus riders, our employees, and other community members are safe. So there is a lot of coordination. Of course, we hope that none of that comes through, but in case it does, I want to assure the board that there's a lot happening behind the scenes to ensure that our employees and our riders are safe. And that concludes my comments for today.
Thank you very much, AJ. And I'm glad to hear there is that level of preparation. Let's go ahead and move to announcements and additions to the agenda. Yes, go ahead, Josh.
Thank you, Carl. I'd like to make suggest two additional topics. Each one of them could be pretty quick, but I was hoping that we would have a quick discussion essentially about the possibility of asking OHA to update its guidance for transit, especially related to cleaning transit vehicles. I can say more if we have time for that. And then I wanted to, I was hoping for a quick discussion of having a essentially a public health decision framework for LTD that looks at local conditions, pandemic conditions. I can say more about either one of those if you want, but that's the basic idea.
Okay.
Well, we will save this for the end to vote on as a group to see if we'll add those to the agenda, and then we'll discuss them if that comes to be. And I want to acknowledge that Emily Secord has joined us now, so we do have a quorum now. Okay, so just checking to make sure, any other announcements or agenda items? Great, let's go ahead and move on to our main purpose for today, which is the ridership and operations update. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay, and we're gonna have a few other people chime in here. So I will start. So just as a kind of picking up from the last time we had a session on ridership, you'll recall we talked about how we're, our focus is balancing these two pieces of ensuring the safety of our operators and riders while providing as much service as we can to provide for essential trip making in the region. And so we've made the changes in the fall bid, and we talked through the fact that we still are experiencing overloads, and so wanted to talk today for my part just about kind of what we've been doing to dig just a little bit deeper into the vast amount of data that we collect on our ridership and kind of how that's feeding into the next change of service. So to begin with, you might recall that in the summer, we were operating essentially hourly service on most of our routes. And this example here, just by way of illustration, is for the 41 trip. So you can see we had hourly service on the half hour. So 9:30, 10:30, 11:30. Sorry, I need to move a Zoom thing out of the way. And you can see for the 9:30 trip, we were 45% of the trips during this summer bid period. So that was a couple months. Experienced overloads, and the 10:30 trip had 64%, and the 11:30 had 61% trips were overloaded, and those were overloaded to certain degrees. You've seen the distributions in past presentations, but wanted to illustrate to you kind of what happens when you add specific trips and kind of what the results are. And so with the added a 9 o'clock trip and an 11 o'clock trip in this example. And so in adding the 9 o'clock trip, that trip is currently experiencing overloads about 4% of the trips. And for the 11 o'clock, I'm sorry, the 11 a.m. trip, it's about 8%. And what that did in terms of the 9:30, 10:30, 11:30 trips, you can see here, the 9:30 trips were down 32%, the 10:30 trips down 40%, and then the 11:30 trips were down 8%. So still experiencing overloads on those hourly services, but you can see that's the effect of adding that kind of frequency. And so as we move forward, for example, you might observe there's a 9 o'clock trip and an 11 o'clock trip. We didn't put a 10 o'clock trip in at this point. We were using those resources in other ways, but that would be one of the things that we do here. And that's likely to continue to manage those trips down in terms of using frequency. The process that we're using at this point, and again, like I said, diving deeper into the trip level data, is to really examine to borrow a word from our COVID conditions. We're putting every overload on what we're calling a watch list, and we're using that list to then discern which of those are what we're characterizing as persistent. And we're still looking to kind of settle out as to what specifically that might mean. But as you can imagine, just in looking at the data that you've seen here, there are overloaded trips. The same trip is overloaded in both the summer bid and the fall bid. At a minimum, that's persistent. And so those are things that, once we have those persistent trips, what we need to do is go out and actually physically observe kind of what's going on, who is using this trip, where's that and these understand that these trips, these overloads are happening at specific stops along the route. So we go out and observe those. And again, that's going to inform additional strategies that we can employ in the next round of service changes, which Mark's going to talk about. And
that's a quick question.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the 41 route very much. So is,
The
three bus, the buses that you have, I know it's a graphic, but the added 9 o'clock and added 11 o'clock, that was part of the fall bid. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. And so what you're showing is that this at least with fall compared to summer, it has kind of spread things out a little bit.
Right. And the data that you saw before didn't get down into this level of detail. So we thought we'd explain, there are some benefits to adding the frequency, but as you can see, there's still overloads that we need to manage. And that's why we've instituted this process of more thoroughly assessing what's going on with these.
Got it. Thanks. I guess the reason I was asking was that I wasn't sure if we were trying to react in real time, so to speak, with overloads and such, with adjusting things. That's not what we're doing.
Well, there's a combination of strategies. I'm speaking more from the structural things we can do with our service to address it, like we did with the fall bid. We added this service, so we'll be doing something similar in the January bid. There's other things that operations does day to day to try and address these with trippers and things like that, but that's not a long-term solution. That's why we want to kind of dig deeper, figure out what's going on and try and adjust.
Thanks for explaining that. I just wanted to see what, so it sounds like we're gathering information to be able to make adjustments for the next,
right.
for winter. Got it.
Correct.
Thank you.
Huh? And other questions?
Super fast. Thank you, Tom. This is super helpful. Percentages when there are no absolute values in there can be a little deceiving. Can you just help us understand like what total ridership looks like in the sort of the piece of the 41 that we're looking at here?
I'd have to look at the more detailed boarding data we're talking about what I would want to do. Let me put it this way, would be to be able to address, I think what I'm hearing is an underlying question about where the overloads are occurring on the route. So kind of at the stop level, I don't have that information right here in front of me, but.
I see my question might have sounded like that. I was actually thinking more about trying to understand not just where we need to alleviate overloads, but trying to read where there's latent demand so we can make sure that we are scaling service accordingly.
Exactly. No, and that's a consideration as we look at these. And you can see, I think you might recall in the charts that we showed before that Andrew presented, very obviously you can see the presence of latent demand in that graphic, right? And so what we're looking at is reviewing. So again, for example, on the 41, a lot of the overloads that we're seeing that happen are happening inbound in the morning. So you can imagine commuters getting on and whatnot. So as part of our process, we're drilling down and looking at more specifically where in which stops are these overloads happening and where are we kind of more strategically at this point, because we've added some service. But where can we add perhaps another bus to address all the overloads that are happening between 9 and 11 or something like that? So, I understand. I think I understand the intent of your question is to talk about the latent demand. And I mean, we saw that in this ad. And it's going to depend on the conditions, right, with respect to whether we see additional ridership with the change in January.
Thanks.
Okay. So I'm actually going to turn things over to Mark. And we're going to talk about this set of information.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. So, it's kind of like a little bit like whack-a-mole as far as trying to, really figure out where the, overloads are happening. I mean, like 41 is a good example because there's some pretty consistency there, but there's others that aren't. And one thing about the 41, they're really short term. So they're overloaded for a very short time and then people get off. So, you know, and it's like, okay, well, you know, how do you respond to that? But there's some things we can do and that we're looking at. And so we've been working with the union and trying to figure out, okay, when's the best time to put a new bid in place? And so, and the reality is the winter, December particularly, is a low ridership month. You know, U of O's out, schools are out and whatnot. So we don't anticipate things getting, you know, really don't anticipate any change, let's put it that way. And if it does, it'll probably change downward. And so we're anticipating getting through the holidays and having our bid in January. So like third week of January, we'd start the bid and make the service changes then. And that way we get through the holidays and, once people start coming back, then we'll be ready to do the service changes based on the information that we have from the September bid. So that's the timing there. Fair collection is also an issue that we've been looking at and trying to address along with the barriers. And Matt's going to do a presentation on the barriers in a little bit to let you know kind of where those are. So we're still anticipating sometime in January, and it may be that with the bid, maybe we do all that all at the same time as far as fair collection and get that going, because that'll have an impact also on ridership and some of the overloads that we're having. The 41 particularly, my guess will, you know, the overloads go down once we start collecting fares on that. So we'll be, you know, really kind of looking at that and paying attention to that. And so I'm going to turn over to Matt, and he will talk to you about barriers and where those are at and just give you a quick update.
And as Mark alluded to, one of our strategies for fare collections is to get the barriers installed. And so that's something we've been working on steadily since early in the pandemic. And we've received many of the barriers, a prototype initially, to try to figure out how are we going to take this to make it work in our buses. Since every bus series is unique, it's not a one size fit all. So there's always some of those tweaking. And so our team in fleet maintenance has been doing a great job of making that work for LTD. And we're at a place with our Gillig series buses to start implementing those. And we actually have, we've installed just over 10, and we have taken drivers through an orientation to get them familiar with what it now will look like for driving our buses, and are at a place to start consistently working on that to deploy those into service. So as of today, we actually have about 9, I believe, of those buses out in service for drivers to utilize on those barriers. And we'll continue just for the installation of those Gillig barriers. And we're gonna be transitioning to our New Flyer Excelsiors, where we have prototyped a few of the New Flyers. And we believe we have some process improvements to then implement. So all of these prototypes take time for our team, and they are performing them well in the shop. And we believe as we continue to go through the holidays, we'll have all of our fixed route buses installed with new barriers to kind of go in line with the new bid and the fare collection timeframe, as Mark referenced. So our team has steadily been working on it, and we believe we have a good solution for those in our buses.
All right, thanks, Matt. Any questions for Matt? Looks like Josh.
Josh, go ahead.
Thank you, Mark and Carl. And thank you, Mark and Matt. That is great to hear. And I would say we are all now accustomed to speaking through plexiglass barriers. So it's interesting how that's become kind of normal. I have had a couple of people, as I talk to people about transit, I've had a couple of people say, why don't you have those on the buses? And I say, they're coming. And they're like, oh, why did they get them in the supermarkets first? And I'm like, I have no idea. So you did just give me one answer, like not one size fits all. We have different buses. You have to adapt it. Do you want to, I don't know if there are another, like just two or three things you can tell us about why it is challenging. I mean, it does strike me as it's going to be harder than putting it at a supermarket checkout stand. But if you have just a couple of details you can share, it's helpful for us to be able to carry that message.
Yeah, I think one of the things we talked from the get-go was what type of strategy did we want to deploy? Was it a short-term fix or kind of a long-term fix? And there are DOT standards in regards to some of the long-term fixes, as far as you can't just put up a curtain and protect from COVID. So some of those longer-term solutions have to meet DOT standards. And so we went more with that long-term approach with implementing these things. So if you do get a chance to see, and I do have a photo if we want to take a look, it's surprising how stout they are to last the life of the bus. We look at that, we took the strategy where it's just not taking us through 2020, 2021. We took the strategy to have that asset on that bus the whole entire time. So I will try to share a screen just to show one of our drivers kind of modeling out what we put on, and just to kind of see how stout they are. But the polycarbonate that we're using, which is a scratch resistant, is about a half of an inch thick. So just a little bit thicker than what you've been seeing in some of the supermarkets. You guys can see all my emails. Let me grab this photo. And so these are, this is what you see in our Gillig buses. So it's a pretty heavy duty polycarbonate right here. You can't really see how thick it is, but it's a half of an inch thick. So that was the approach that we took. Again, we knew that the virus wasn't a short-term thing, it's maybe lasting longer than we were all hoping, but we wanted to do a long-term strategy with it.
And part of what the barriers also do is protect our operators from assault. So, you know, he said, look, if we're going to do it, they can serve multiple purposes. They can keep germ carriers away from them so they're not breathing on them, but they can also be a buffer from, you know, them potentially being assaulted. And that was the original intent of barriers and buses, was to protect operators from assault. So we decided, you know, to, like Ed Matt said, take a long-term approach and not just put a shower curtain up and put something up that will protect them in multiple ways for years to come.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mark and Matt.
Carl, you mind just jumping for a quick second?
Yeah, go ahead, Stephen.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, Matt, and thanks, Mark, for that. And Mark, you just hit on a point I just want to make sure that I understand that I was about to ask. So they look very stout, as Matt had said, and that's great. And it also protects the driver. So if a unruly passenger tries to push through that thing, is that latch only controlled by the driver, and it's not something an unruly passenger can quickly just reach around and open up and then get at the driver?
Yeah, that's true. Yes, it takes some work to get through it. It's, you know, it's a half inch thick. It's framed in metal and it's latched in the inside. And so, if somebody really, really, really wanted to do it, they could, but it would take some doing.
Okay, so my question was more about that latch. That latch takes more than just a quick flick. So if a passenger reached around, it's not easy to pop it open and then get at the driver?
Matt, you can probably answer that better than I, because you've been.
Did we lose audio?
Yeah, sorry, Stephen. But you know, if someone knew how to get in there and do that, you could stretch your hand around that and unlatch that. It would take some doing, but it definitely protects our drivers more than nothing.
Okay, thanks. And I fully appreciate, Matt, that we can't make it a jigsaw puzzle to get out, because then the driver's going to have trouble in case he or she needs to get out. But I just wanted to make sure it wasn't something that very simply could just be flicked, and then the driver is suddenly exposed to a unruly passenger. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Any more questions on the barriers?
I'm not seeing any, so yeah, please go ahead, Mark.
Okay, so the next thing, part of what we're doing in terms of our Safety First campaign is educating people and passengers, working with our public partners, and making sure that everybody understands their responsibility when it comes to washing their hands, wearing masks, and doing the things that they should be doing to protect everyone. And so Cosette's going to share some information about the steps we're taking, to a campaign to, get information out to people in a different way. Cosette, are you there?
Looks like she needs to be brought over into our meeting, which I think
AJ's
brought. She's probably working on it.
Okay. She's new to this.
Cosette is silently raising her hand because that's all she can do right now.
I would drag her over if I could.
And just so you know, I'm trying to find her.
She was at the top of the list.
She's not showing up on my Collier.
Yeah, she's at the top of the list on under attendees.
There she is. Oh, sorry. Promote to panelist. I guess Camille works harder than I give her credit for.
I have no doubt it's harder than it looks.
Cosette.
Hi, Al. It's great to see you all. So I'm here tonight to talk about a campaign that LTD has been working on. As you all know, we've experienced a really sharp increase in COVID cases, and we need to find a way to be proactive to reduce the number of cases to avoid our community slipping back into phase one restrictive situation, and also self-serving for LTD, really to keep our customers and our employees safe. So LTD met with a lot of our partners, including Lane County, City of Eugene, City of Springfield, Eugene and Springfield Chambers of Commerce and Travel Lane County. And we talked about putting together a campaign really to address some specific goals for COVID-19 and to reduce the number of cases that keep climbing. So LTD contracted with the Terrell Group to create a campaign for us. And really what we were wanting to do is, we know that we've all been experiencing fatigue in messaging. So the messaging has been primarily pretty oppressive and negative, but delivering really critical information. So we felt that it was important for us to find a creative way to engage the public, to kind of bolster them actually doing the right thing and following the guidelines. So we were looking for new ways to engage the community, to be diligent and to support them to do so in a positive way. I'm going to share with you. So this is the campaign that we've got. The goals of the campaign are to support those who are doing what's needed and to cheer them on. We wanted to find positive ways to engage and inspire other folks to change their behaviors and have some fresh messaging that's engaging and it has legs and can be refreshed, because we don't know how long this is going to last. We also wanted to create some messaging that would not only meet LTD's needs for a campaign, but it could also be shared and picked up by our partner agencies who maybe haven't had the resources or the time to be able to put together this kind of campaign. But by doing so together, we can get a lot more legs and coverage out of it. So we looked at three different options with the Terrell Group. The first one was kind of a heartstrings option. The second one was utilizing kind of World War era graphics, kind of nostalgic. And then the third one, I mean, I'm going to call it kind of the cheesy. It's the don't invite COVID. And this is the one we decided on because we felt that it was engaging. It was different. It was not the same kind of presentation that had been presented before. So there's opportunities for this graphic. So this is the follow the four. So the four is social distancing, wearing a mask, washing your hands, and avoiding gatherings. So this, it looks kind of cheesy. People may need a bit of Lactaid before they watch the full campaign, but we're in the process right now of getting ready to launch this. And this would be available through bus ads. We're going to be doing weekly social media posts. There'll be YouTube, we'll have signage. We'll be producing window clings, and there'll be some paid and earned TV radio. We've met with our partners. All of our partners are really excited. So these will be created in a way that, again, can be pushed out and utilized by LTD to support our community to do the things that they need to do to reduce the number of COVID cases. And also, we know that there's other agencies here in our area who are excited and will be utilizing this. So we'll be making the design elements available to others in our community. We also know that there's other transit districts in Oregon who are interested in picking up this campaign as well and utilizing it. So we think that it's going to be really fun and exciting. And really, again, changing how we engage to try to get some new folks engaged enough to change their behaviors. So I tried to keep that brief. I hope I did. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Cosette.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Caitlin. You go first and I'll go after you.
Oh, thanks, Carl. Can you just clarify, is this campaign for due diligence or are you genuinely trying to educate people on how to not spread or contact COVID?
So that's a great question. It's a little bit of both, but really what we're trying to do is educate. So this actually doesn't necessarily present itself very, very well in this kind of format. It's really going to present itself better in video and other ways, but really what we're trying to do is to get people to not invite COVID. Don't invite COVID to your gatherings. Don't invite COVID into your life. Don't invite COVID into your car. Don't invite COVID anywhere. And how you do that is by doing these four kind of due diligence items. It's really, again, trying to engage people, trying to encourage and support people. And also, again, I think in a really creative way and a kind of a fun way, but effective way, engaging maybe new parts of our community who haven't necessarily been engaged in the past.
Cosette, I was wondering, in the context of a transit rider, do we have anything more specific for that? Because I would be worried that there would be some riders who would see these messages and not understand how it interacts or relates to when they're trying to get on a bus or just doing any kind, because I think also LTD is more than just about bus transportation, but all forms of transportation.
Sure. And we actually had a lot of conversation about this, Carl, so I'm glad that you brought that up. So how we're representing this is more general than applying it to how it might be used on the bus. In some respects, we want to be really sensitive and careful to how and where we represent COVID. So again, we've humanized COVID, and COVID can be anywhere. We just want to be really sensitive of potentially representing COVID on a bus or on any of our facilities. So likely you won't see that. So this is more a general campaign that we can, in our own way, tailor and own it. And what we know is that public transportation isn't or hasn't been really tied to a lot of spread of COVID. It's actually been spread in other ways and in other places. But it's important that people are diligent on and off the bus in order for us to be able to continue to reliably provide safe public transportation. So we're just going to be really sensitive, as well as the chambers of commerce are really asking us to be sensitive. For instance, showing COVID sitting at a restaurant. We wouldn't want to necessarily do that. So again, we want to be careful. We don't want to scare anyone. We don't want to negatively impact any of the businesses in our community or LTD or the confidence of using public transportation. But we do want to really clearly express what people need to do in order to remain safe. And again, this is to remain safe on the bus, but it could be used anywhere.
No, thank you for that, Cosette. But just really quick follow-up. I totally understand and hear what you're saying about providing imagery that could be kind of inaccurate or also kind of maybe even irresponsible in terms of what it portrays. But I worry that, like, when I look at this poster, and I know this is not the only thing, but if I'm supposed to keep far away from other people and avoid crowds, then I worry that I think we're, in some ways I could see some people interpreting this as don't go on a bus. And so I'm just trying to figure out if there's a way to still do that kind of general messaging, but also educate people on something about how it relates to their personal transport. And then after me, we'll go Josh. But go ahead, please go ahead, Cosette.
No, I think that's good, Carl. And this is, I'll take that feedback back to our agency and we'll have that discussion and make sure that that's considered. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Because I would want people to follow what you're showing here, but I don't want them to misunderstand and then use that as a reason not to avoid certain things. Josh, and then Caitlin next.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate that. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Cosette, for bringing this to us and for all the work, obviously, that's gone into developing a campaign with a bunch of partners. I know that is a bunch of work. I really want to emphasize Carl's point to start with. It's really actually quite striking that even in places with high prevalence, like France is maybe the best example, there are almost no cases tied to the Paris Metro or the Paris bus system because there is uniform, mandatory mask wearing. So I do think we have a challenge there. And I like that Carl pulled that out of there. And I know you guys have heard that from me before. As a quick point about the restaurants, I don't want to be really unpopular, but I will just say in the places where the most extensive contact tracing has been done around the world, it's all bars and restaurants. I mean, like that those are like really the big places where it has gotten spread. So at which, we can understand why. Okay, let me move on from the unpopular thing and just ask a couple other questions. I'm curious who exactly, if you can tell us all this quickly, who are the partners and where will these appear? Just so we kind of understand where it is. This is kind of the context, I guess, for Carl's question about trying to have transit-specific messaging at some point.
Sure. So the partners, again, are City of Eugene, City of Springfield. We have Lane County. We have Travel Lane County. We have the Eugene and Springfield Chambers of Commerce. We're also reaching out to the University of Oregon and LCC, the school district. So we're reaching out to some other agencies. The design elements could be made available to them. They could change the messaging to some extent to fit the services that they provide or the particular areas of interest. I'm not sure if that fully answers your question, but what we've done with our partners is we've taken an inventory of channels that they may be utilizing this in. So for instance, Travel and County, they do quite a bit of advertising. They have their own email lists that they send out notifications. They have a lot of ways that they reach out into the community. So they could use this in their campaign and they could put their own logo on it. They could put Don't Invite COVID on the Hike. They could personalize it for their own uses and their own message.
Great, thank you.
Thanks.
Great, we have Caitlin next.
I just want to circle back and Cosette, thanks for clarifying how the partners would use the messaging. Consistency is great. But with that being said, let's just make sure that we're all really on board and being like, wow, this is great messaging if it's going to be that widespread. I want to make sure that we're all really feeling 110% about it before it goes that it saturates the market that much. And then I think my feedback was, I like that you're trying to do something out of the box, and you were using the words cheesy. And I think that cheesy tends to get people's attention, and people can relate to it. So I like that you're trying something different, and I applaud you guys for doing that. I definitely would just, you know, feel free to also reach out to me if I'm allowed to volunteer myself for like just a sounding board for things. Because the fact that we have a poster of someone pulling down their mask, that was like the first thing, like, oh, I can pull down my mask. Cool. And like show my mouth or talk to people or smile or whatever. So being so, so careful about that imagery and making sure the imagery is matching the message is going to be really important, because I feel like there's some really great elements to this, but that's the very first thing that struck out to me. But anyways, more praise around just trying to think outside the box. I'm glad that we're taking this initiative to be like, hey, we're gonna step it up with our messaging and try something new and different, and take this really seriously, and then invite our partners to get on board. I appreciate you guys doing that.
Well, I appreciate the feedback, and for sure, Caitlin, we can reach out to you. And you know, there was a lot of urgency around putting this together and getting it out. So initially, it'll just be basically an introduction to the COVID character, and then we'll be introducing new applications. Again, new messaging that goes along with the COVID character. And I absolutely agree with you. The last thing we want to do is to encourage the wrong behavior. So the graphic does need to match the message. So I appreciate that.
Okay, thanks, Cosette.
Great. Just checking around the room. Any other questions for Cosette or comments?
Yeah, just two super quick things. Cosette, are you aware of the studies on campus that Ben Clark and 3PM is doing, where they're doing surveillance and masks? I'll just connect you. I just think they're doing a bunch of things to sort of figure out compliance. They have students walking the campus and looking for like the, and sort of recording mask wearing, for example. They're doing a bunch of things like that that might be kind of interesting. And the other thing I would say is, I am frankly dying to know what percentage of people, with no words on that, what percentage of people in our target audiences for this would identify that guy as COVID? Like, I mean, I know he's like big and roundish, and those are like supposed to be the spike proteins that now we see on all the little, you know, graphic representations. But we are all old compared to many of the target audiences we're talking about here. So I just want to be appropriately humble. Maybe you focus grouped that already, but I'm curious to know at some point.
That's a great question. So first of all, I will reach out to Ben Clark. That would be good information to have. And second of all, we did a lot of informal focus groups, really trying to, I think, target the younger groups. But at least the focus groups that we did, again, fairly informal so that we could get this out fairly quickly. It was broadly appealed. So a lot of different age groups loved it. So. And again, it was just kind of cheesy and outside the box and different from what we've been hearing over and over and over again.
That's great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the whole point of this is to push more public safety, right? And the safety of our employees, safety of our bus operators, and safety of the community. And so, you know, that's really why we're doing it in the first place. And so it's not to discourage bus riders at all. I mean, we're still, you know, encouraging people to take essential trips. But say, if you're going to ride the bus, then wear your mask and keep social distancing and do the things that are important to keep everyone safe. So.
Thanks for that clarification, Mark. I just want to make sure that that message is just clear so that there's that it isn't possibly convoluted to the average person when they see that. Thank you very much, Cosette. Back to you, Mark. I didn't know if you had more to.
I think just to kind of talk about the ridership data and stuff, where you know, we're coming, I think we're meeting every 2 weeks now, and nothing's really changing right now, and I anticipate things will be pretty stable over the next month or two until we, you know, do the new bids. So the question for you guys is, do you still want me to have ridership updates and do these every 2 weeks during the holidays? And, you know, if you do, that's great. But we don't really anticipate a lot of, you know, changes. I mean, things are pretty stable, and I might guess the ridership and issues will be kind of the same.
Yeah, and actually on that note, maybe this will help people decide, at least on the U of O ridership. Mark, you were mentioning sort of the time frame of looking at ridership and ridership dropping off. The U of O will have even less on-campus activity after Thanksgiving, to the extent that you guys probably know this, but just for the board to know, to the extent that there's on-person stuff at U of O, that will, there's nothing after. Like, if people go home for Thanksgiving, they won't be returning. So, yeah, we might see even, you know, a really, really soft December.
Yeah, that's our anticipation. It'll go down even, so.
Yeah, well, thanks for offering that to us, Mark. I think one of the reasons why we were meeting, at first, you know, weekly, was to be nimble and adapt to change. I think what we're hearing from you today is that things aren't actually changing that much. It's going to be a long haul, and that you've also covered lots of safety issues and security issues and things. So there's not an expectation of anything for us to even act upon. And so, and I appreciate you trying to be respectful of our time as well. So that's why I've been hearing from your presentation. And I think that's what I'm hearing about why we may not need to have a December meeting. But let's throw that around the room. Just I see head nods. Emily, I don't know if you want to comment or anything like that. I saw your head nod.
Oh, yeah, I just was gonna say it makes sense if we're sort of anticipating what the numbers look like, but unless there's a big shock, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of new information to report for that, but I do wanna at least get an update that we were correct in our assumptions or not.
Any other comments? I think we just do this by consensus. I think we'd be okay. Just checking with you, Stephen.
Thumbs up. I happen to agree with what Emily just said.
Great. Okay, so I see thumbs up. I will also concur. So we'll go ahead and forgo the December special board meeting for our ridership update. Great. Well, thank you very much, Mark, for that. And it sounds like you'll let us know. It sounds like, Emily, just to check, you want like just an email sent to us, like, hey, everything's good.
Yeah, we can give you a get written report, absolutely, and make sure, okay, you know, keep you in the loop for sure.
Perfect.
That sounds good. And Carl, that was December 2nd.
That's the reason I was hesitating to say a date, because I didn't know. Let me take a look. So if I'm flipping through the calendar, I think it would have been December 2nd.
Thank you.
Well, but before we leave, well, yeah, sorry. I wanted to make one more comment on the ridership report, but I'm fine skipping the December 2nd meeting.
Okay. Oh, so did you want to make a comment about today's ridership report?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I appreciate it. And unless I missed the items before, Tom, I really liked, I mean, you have, it's not exactly the kind of heat map that we discussed a few months ago that BART is producing, but I like that heat map a lot with the, you have for 40 and 60 foot bus overloads, and you have the route and the days. The one that BART has is like times of day, if you remember, it's sort of that temporally granular, but this is really great. And I think it's actually probably easier for us to read in certain ways. And we can sort of, it gives us some insight into how you guys are making the decisions. So that's helpful, thank you.
I second that, Josh. I really liked Chom's graphics in the meeting today.
Thought the buses were really fun. Thanks for adding those.
Yeah. Hey, we thought a lot about how to present that.
So. I love that you had like full bus clip art and half full bus clip art. That was amazing. I love that those were available.
I guess we like pictures, Tom. I guess I think.
Yeah, I'm getting away. That strong message. So expect more pictures.
But for the record, I was referring to the boring page of numbers and with very little color, just to be clear.
If you can do a 3D pop-up, I think we would really, really like that. Just kidding. Let's see. So I believe, well, I'm sorry, Mark, just make sure, is there anything else that you want to add before I move on to our final items?
I am done. Thank you all.
Good job. Thank you very much, Mark. Thanks, Cosette. So board, we have about 10 minutes left, and I think Josh was trying to propose two items to discuss. But Josh, let me counter propose. I think what I'm hearing you say, so I believe the two things you wanted to talk about were guidelines with regarding to cleaning, and then I think the second one was about bus occupancy. Like, was that right?
Yeah, the second one is maybe too complicated. I think we could do the first one really quickly. But what?
Well, I was going to propose. I feel like you have something to say about it, and rather than us voting on it, I think I would be. I mean, and if I could just get a concurrence from the rest of the board, I think I'm fine just hearing what you have to say about it, given the time we have left. And if there's people want to respond to it, I think that would be fine too.
Okay, that's great. I would love that, and I'll try to make it quick. But I actually think there might be something for the board to vote on here. So shared, and this is really I'm sort of. Following AJ's suggestion on this of bringing this to the board. So here's the basic idea I wanted to bring before people. The OHA guidelines for transit, especially related to cleaning. So you guys may remember OHA issued, you know, with the help of a task force that AJ was a part of, some guidelines for transit related to the pandemic back in May. And it included a bunch of regular cleaning, like we see regular cleaning all over the place. Now that was May, that's a long time ago. Since then, we actually have realized that surfaces are much less important as a form of, as a medium of transmission, and that really airborne transmission is the thing to worry most about. So it's really the other things that we're doing about ventilation and mask wearing that matter. But we are still cleaning buses like crazy, and we are spending a lot of money and taking a lot of time to do so. And so I chatted with AJ about this, and AJ, make sure I get this right, but she wanted, before sort of going and talking to OHA, she wanted to get support from us as a board. So, and I think the recommendation would be, you know, we'd be asking the general manager just to ask OHA to update those guidelines based on more recent science. And the reason I say that, the reason I think this is important is that I know OHA is busy, but OHA is actually updating other guidelines. You guys have probably followed the changes for schools. There have been some changes for like daycares and dance studios and a bunch of other things where they're, you know, group settings of one kind or another. So I'm guessing if they looked at this for a few minutes, they'd be like, oh yeah, you do not need to clean the buses as much as you've been cleaning them. I'm not saying don't clean them, but I'm saying we might be able to reduce labor on that a lot in a way that would affect our cost per service hour. And I think we all have cost per service hour looming in our heads from Christina's presentation a little while back. So that's the basic idea. Do people have questions about like the rationale or what we might do?
Well, I want to say really quick, I don't think we need to vote on anything today. I mean, certainly I think board members can chime in on their thoughts on that. But what I'm hearing from you, Josh, is that I know you're not saying that we're a health agency, but if the OHA has put out guidelines and we as a transit agency are following them, I don't think we're following them without any problems that I've heard of, at least, and AJ can certainly or Mark could attest to that or speak on that. I'm not sure what I feel like we're trying to solve a problem that isn't a problem.
Yeah, so that's helpful.
Let me Mark had his handle. Let me have Mark go ahead.
Yeah, so just so everybody knows, I mean, right now the guidelines are clean the buses every 4 hours. Basically, that's what we're committed to. That's what CDC is telling us to do. That's what the APTA commitment is, and that's what OHA is telling us to do. And so, you know, every 4 hours, we, you know, kind of wipe down the buses to, you know, to make sure. Just so you know how often we're doing it. So
it sounds like, just to reiterate what Mark is saying, that we have our transit professional organization saying the same thing. We have the CDC saying the same thing. We have the state health agency saying the same thing. So I think I'm just trying to frame the situation. And then throwing it out to other board members, any comments?
Can I respond to that framing? Because the framing, Carl, it's well-intentioned, but it's problematic. The guidelines change for a lot of different sectors. but they don't change unless the stakeholders in the sector often nudge people to change. CDC has issued lots of guidance that then people have complained about it and brought evidence about, and then they've changed. And the same is for OHA. So I don't want us to view the current standard as somehow necessarily based on the most recent knowledge. That's what I'm saying. So I want to make sure we're clear about that. I'm not saying it's like outrageous, but I am saying we are, as I understand it, we are spending real money to clean buses.
Oh, I wanted to note that Don Norden has joined us. Hi, Don. And then Mark, go ahead.
And I think one more consideration is, I mean, we went from, you know, cleaning the buses every hour almost, you know, just every time they come through, they were cleaning, wiping them down, to every 4 hours. And part of that is, you know, bus operators need to feel comfortable, you know, and going to 4 hours, they didn't feel really comfortable about that. And so, you know, first saying, well, you know, we're going to push to not clean them all or only clean them at nighttime. That, I don't know, that's a really great message for our employees when we're telling them, you know, that their safety is our top priority and that we just are really concerned about that. And so, you know, and maybe there's a different balance we can strike, but yeah, so that is a concern.
Great.
Mark, thanks for letting us know that we went from every hour to every 4 hours. That was helpful context.
Yeah, going around the room, anyone else have comments? Okay, hearing. Oh, Caitlin, go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry, I was just saying that I felt like Mark's answer cleared that up for me, and I don't feel like I need to make any action on this.
Okay, great.
Josh, did you have a time frame that you preferred, or like the length of time of the bus being out of commission, or any follow-up?
Well, it wouldn't really be for me to suggest a precise time frame. What I think is very clear from the evidence that's out there now is that if you are making this decision based on what is an effective way to allocate resources, you would not clean the buses every 4 hours. You would either put those resources toward doing something else, like dealing with ventilation or the barriers, which we're doing, or you would run more buses to decrease loads. But you wouldn't clean the buses this frequently. And I'm saying this is the evidence that I have been gathering. I'm happy to share that with people if they want, but I wanna take seriously what Mark said. I don't wanna do something that is, you know, that makes our operators feel unsafe. I think that's a big deal. But then we should be helping our operators to understand the things that actually will meaningfully contribute to their safety, and frequent cleaning of the buses probably won't do much at all. So it's really about like how we're spending our money and whether we're sort of getting actual safety benefit out of it. So
I've got Stephen next, and I'm gonna try to wrap us up to adjourn for the evening. Go ahead, Stephen.
Thank you, Carl. As I think I'm hearing this, and Mark jump in or Josh jump in if I'm not hearing it correctly, but I think, Josh, you are saying that we can ask the OHA to update their guidance, and that may or may not tell us to wash buses or clean the buses every hour, 4 hours, once a month, or whatever it is. And Mark, you're saying that we have OHA and at least two other agencies that we look to, APTA and CDC, and even if the OHA comes in and says whatever they say, that might not be in alignment with these other groups that we look to for guidance. And thirdly, you made the very good point of, I think we need to involve the ATU and see what they feel, because Josh, your point about the fact that transmission apparently is predominantly through aerosol and not through surfaces, that might be right. And I happen to think it is right, but we still have to communicate clearly to make sure ATU members feel comfortable and understand that. So to me, I would say it doesn't hurt to ask OHA to clarify, but I think Mark brings up some very good points, and we need to engage the ATU side to make sure they're comfortable.
Yeah, and there's also new OSHA guidelines coming out, so that they're working on. So that is also something we're keeping a really close eye on.
Thank you. I do want to say, if this is something the board would like us to follow up on, I really do think that we need to maybe consult a professional so that we can go to OHA. And I don't know how we would do that, but we can do that. That's something we can look up and have get a professional opinion. In the conversation that Josh and I had was, I wanted to be clear that I did not feel comfortable telling OHA that I read an article and I feel that they should update that. I thought that that would land wrong and we wouldn't accomplish what we're trying to accomplish. I think if we want to seek help for doing that in talking to OHA, we would have to see what that process is, and also make sure that OSHA then changed their guideline. So it is a heavy lift, because we probably would get our lobbyist involved to make sure that we got to all the right people to try to change the rules to reduce this. So that definitely would be something that I would put our Tiffany Edwards on and put our lobbyist on to assist us in getting all the right people to give us that level of advice, so that we would be taken seriously at those levels, being that one transit agency requesting it is probably not enough for them to change their rules.
Emily, and then I think I have a way to possibly wrap this up. Go ahead, Emily.
I was just going to say, it sounds expensive that we're going to be advising all of these other folks to review something that they may already be reviewing. And so I think we should just make sure we're doing a cost benefit analysis of the two options before we just go all full speed ahead.
Thanks, Emily. You know, based on what AJ said, you know, I think we have to be very cognizant that, you know, these things affect more than just Lane Transit District, and that we belong to, you know, a brotherhood, sisterhood of transit agencies and other agencies that are similar to what the work that we do. And I definitely agree with Stephen. Hey, you know, we should always be consulting with our employees to make sure that they have some agency and input on these issues. With that being said, I'm guessing there probably is some consensus to let AJ and her staff continue that work, not only internally, but also externally with our other agencies, to make sure that if anything's being done, it's being done in that way, because it sounds like there already is some level of alignment with on some of these issues. But yeah, there might be room for changes and improvements, as with any kind of process, but let's make sure to do it that concurrently with those, all of those groups and interests at the same time. I'll take head nods or thumbs up or whichever. You didn't have to love what I said, but you can live with it.
I'm not entirely sure what you said. It sounded like you were just saying let's wait
I would clarify saying I think people are working on it in a sense, but I do think some of the finer points being brought up about communications with in terms of with our employees and also with our sister agencies and our professional organization I can't think of the right word right now, but that's being done right now. Industry organization. Thank you.
Can reach out to, we can start with OTA, the Oregon Transit Association.
Yeah.
Tiffany and I both attend those. So if that's something where we start, and then take it from there and bring you back a report as to what our progress is, so we can proceed with that.
Yeah.
And I think
that would reach out to the union in the meantime as well.
That would be great, AJ. And I'll just say, just as Caitlin volunteered to help out Cosette, I will volunteer to share with you what I have gathered on this front as well. If you want to make it easier, I want to make it as light a lift as possible for you and Tiffany. So, you know, let me know how I can help.
Thank you, Josh. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Great. So thank you very much, everybody. I think we reached the logical conclusion of our meeting. Just a really quick reminder, there is no meeting next Wednesday, and we also have no meeting on December 2nd. And so everyone, please have a great evening, and please stay healthy and safe. Take care. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye, everybody.